Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye on 94.7 The Pulse.
Now, Monday Sport is coming up in just a moment, but before we get to that, I want to talk about this South Africa, two very different places, and this tour and the boycott that's taken place. And it's a great pleasure to welcome to the program sports, law, and industrial relations expert Brahan Drubscheck. Brahan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Mitch?
Very well indeed. Why have the cricketers decided to boycott South Africa?
Well, I guess the major reason is that at the end of the Memorandum of Understanding, that's an agreement between Cricket Australia and the Australian Cricket Association, which came to an end at the end of June, Cricket Australia sacked its workforce. They were unemployed. There are some players on contract. And the players boycotted the tour. They're invited to tour, and the players decided not to tour out of solidarity with the other players who are now unemployed. Been unemployed now for 10 days.
Is it common in sport to use boycotting as a tool to get your message across?
Well, generally speaking, sport tends to be free of industrial disputes. Presumably your listeners understand the difference between a lockout and a strike. A lockout is when the employer says you can't work here unless you agree on our terms, and a strike is where the workforce refuses to work. So what's happened here is that we're in effect in a lockout. The Cricket Australia locked the players out. And because of the lockout, then the players refused, well, those who were offered to go to South Africa refused to go. Overseas, we've had, particularly in North America, there have been a number of extensive strikes and lockouts. Most of the recent ones have been lockouts, but there have been some strikes. We've had lockouts and strikes in, you know, the big four of American sports: baseball, basketball, hockey, or what we would call ice hockey, and football, that have gone 100 days, 200 days, 300 days. The World Series was cancelled. One was a strike by the baseball players, but that lasted 232 days. A whole season, whole ice hockey season, was cancelled due to a lockout by the owners in that particular sport. So what we could say is that what's happening is, in a limited way, Australia's are catching up. By the way, this already is the longest industrial dispute in the history of Australian sport, though it's only the second one. The Matildas, the national football soccer team, they refused, if you like, they boycotted a tour to the United States because of what they regarded as late and inadequate pay that they received from Football Federation of Australia. Their income at the time was less than the adult minimum wage, and the payments were late. So I tell you, that it's the second one. We have to go back along. There's been threatened strikes and disputes, but this is the longest one. And it's essentially a standoff between Cricket Australia and the Australian Cricketers Association.
Do you think that sporting strikes are different in that the public perception of sports people is different? For example, if nurses go on strike, there's a lot of sympathy, whereas for sports people, I know that you just said, you know, that some people aren't getting the minimum wage, and there's definitely issues there, but I think the perception in the community is, well, these people are getting paid to follow their dreams and travel the world, it can't be that bad, therefore, you know, that same level of empathy just doesn't seem to exist.
There's a view, there's something called the sports mystique, that somehow or other sport's different from other professions, occupations and so on. And there could be some truth in your statement. I think there's also a view that Cricket Australia has been, Cricket Australia is actually the problem, that they're greedy. I think what we've got to remember is, under the old Memorandum of Understanding, or what normally we call a collective bargaining agreement, the players received a 26% share of revenue. Was a revenue sharing model. So if the players get 26%, it means cricket authorities are getting 74%, and the players have offered this case, or their demand is the correct term, their demand in this case is they want a 22.5% share, which also includes the female cricketers, whereas in the past the female cricketers weren't included. So if we said that, you know, the women are worth maybe 1 or 1.5%, they're still, you know, their pay's going up, but they're probably, you know, they're underpaid vis-a-vis the men. So the male players are probably taking a 5% cut of the revenue. So I think most people, some people, maybe many, one would have to do a survey, can't understand how is it that Cricket Australia receives, between 74%, maybe 79, or 77.5%. How are they suffering on that sort of where they receive the lion's share of the revenue generated? And the other thing about a revenue sharing scheme is that if the income goes up, well, the players' payments go up. And if the revenue falls, so revenue sharing model, player payments fall. I mean, revenue sharing is like a payment by results system.
Yeah.
The more work you do, the more pay you get. And employers, particularly in the mining sector, they like revenue sharing or payment by results system because it creates an incentive for the workforce to work harder. And in cricket terms, what that would mean is that if Cricket Australia went to the players and said, look, here's an extra sponsorship, do this, that and the other, maybe sign more memorabilia and so on, we'll pull in an extra, so many dollars, you guys will get a share of it. And that acts as an incentive for the players to try to increase revenue. So public perception, I think, is probably split, but in the absence of surveys, it's very hard to know what the public as a whole thinks.
Mm. Is that why there's a gender pay gap? Because male sport in general, not across all sports, but in general, seems to get more airtime and more exposure and therefore more opportunities for sponsorship, whereas, of course, women's sport and women's cricket probably doesn't have the same opportunities and therefore can't bring in the same kinds of income.
That seems to be the case historically. I think what's interesting in the current climate in the last 2 years is the increasing popularity of women's sport and the increase in payments to players. And I think the women's AFL is probably the best example. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, women players, female players across a whole range of sports, the football codes, basketball, netball, and cricket, the income for female players will increase dramatically, which is and I think that's basically driven by the need of broadcasters for more product, and sponsors have also discovered that little girls like sports just as much as little boys.
Do you think that there's a resolution in sight to what we're seeing with this strike and boycott, and is there an easy solution, or is it something that's likely to go on?
My guess is this is going to drag on for a period, and I think the major reason is that there's no cricket being played at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the boycott of the South African tour. There's a Bangladesh a series coming up, and there's an Indian series. So let's just imagine there was the same dispute was occurring in the AFL or the National Rugby League. I mean, with each week, another round disappears, there's pressure mounts on both sides to resolve the dispute. Doesn't mean they'll necessarily agree, but one might cave in or whatever. But when you've really, essentially in Australia, we don't have any serious cricket until October, November. So in the absence of that pressure, the dispute's likely to drag on. The things that will possibly force the parties together is as we get closer to that point, if not already now, Cricket Australia faces two major problems. One is if they can't provide product for the broadcasters, well, if there's no games played, they won't get revenue from the broadcasters, so that might be subject to the contracts that they have. And I don't know what contract, I haven't read the contracts on. But if there's no cricket played, then broadcaster revenue will fall. And also, if there's nothing can be shown, sponsorship revenue will fall. And I think you might have noted today that I think Mitchell Starc has negotiated a sponsorship deal with a rival car company to protected sponsor of Cricket Australia. And also the Australian Cricketers Association has, the players have signed over their intellectual property rights, that's use of their image and so on, to the Australian Cricketers, signed it over to the Australian Cricketers Association. And I doubt they'll ever let that go. So one of the longer-term problems, and maybe the strongest bargaining chip for the Australian Cricketers Association, is Cricket Australia won't be able to drive as much income from sponsorship because the players have those rights, and to the extent that Cricket Australia wants to use those images, they'll be forced to go to the Australian Cricketers Association to buy those rights, and that's a major change. That's probably the major change in the whole dispute.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Lots going on, and thanks for bringing these issues to our attention.
My pleasure, and all the best. Have a great day.
Thank you. Brian Drabschek there from the University of Melbourne sports law and industrial relations expert.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.